I am the stone that the builder refused. I am the visual, the inspiration that made ladies sing the blues. I'm the spark.
Yo, boy, it's the Review of New Podcast, y'all. I'm DJ.
And I'm Will the Greatest.
And this week, we're going to switch things up and see what folks think about it. Because today, we're going to be looking at episode one of the Boondocks TV show. And if you'd like to see more episodes, head on over to Ko-fi.com/rapcritic, where you can get this and other exclusive material like new music, reviews, and live streams. And, you know, just in general, let me know how you're feeling about me, you know, taking on a TV show episode by episode, really, really digging into it. And especially starting with this one. I know I've got my movie request, but I also wanted to have, you know, just another wing of the podcast to be doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Expand the brand and what have you, you know. So let's get into it. And also because I feel like I did not see that many people like really dissecting this shit. You know, I saw like one podcast that apparently got taken off the internet that I tried to find about the Boondocks. And I feel like they didn't delve into some of the stuff that I'm going to bring up. So I'm like, all right, boom, let's really get into this. So, episode one, Garden Party. I know you've seen this show before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I know you've seen these episodes, none but like the back of your hand. So how was it like coming back to this first episode, looking at it through a critical lens for you?
Here's the funny thing, because I watched on Max just the other day. I didn't realize in my almost 20 years of being familiar with like this show and this series, I have never seen it uncensored.
Yeah.
So this was my first time seeing any of the Boondocks like uncensored, and it hit me like a Mack truck within like the first 10 minutes with the Billy Blank scene.
Well, I can imagine, yeah. And the first 30 seconds with the old man's dick waving in your face. It's like, wow, the show really wanted to start off making an impression.
It's like...
And looking, they animate it, too.
Like, they animated, like physics and everything. But yes! It's like...
And this jiggle physics applied. It's like, oh, my God. It's like, look, we got to balance out some of this female nudity with some old man nudity.
Yeah, and when you were pitching the idea to me, I didn't realize, like, I know we're just focusing on the first episode, but I didn't realize how fucking strong Boondocks, like, comes in with its first few episodes.
Like, oh, yeah, for sure.
It's like the first one I've ever seen is technically the third one, but it's like, but I've seen Garden Party before. And it's like,
I think Garden Party isn't the first one. I think it's called 103 because like,
it's like probably the third one produced, but it's the first one in the season airing order.
Now for me, I fucking loved this show ever since it first came out. I remember the comics. I remember loving all that shit and being like, oh my God, I want, it's that time where you're getting drip fred content every other month or something like that. You're like, oh, I want to. I want more. I want it. And then when Boondocks finally had the TV show, I remember being like, holy shit, this first season is incredible. When's the second season coming out? It's going to be at least half a decade or so.
Yeah, it has that invincible release where it's like, you love the first season. Well, you'll have to wait for the second one.
And now here's the thing. I've heard him say that Aaron Magruder, the creator of the show, that he was like, hey, you know, I grew up on Charlie Brown stuff, and, you know, there'd only be like a special every couple of years or something like that. So that's kind of how I wanted to do my show. And the network's like, yeah, we don't do it that way anymore.
Right.
But I feel like basically he's been kind of, you know, doing the sort of like, yeah, but I kind of want to do it my way, so I'm going to take my time, you know. And better for it, too, because, look, just to get into it just a little bit, like, as much as I love the way the show looks, I think it's beautiful, like, when it comes to motion, I feel like sometimes you can really see the animating on the fours of what's happening, you know what I mean? And it's like it's a beautiful looking show. And this is just a general problem with like black animated shows in general, right?
Like given how old it is, it still looks really good, like in terms of it's just animation and like the character designs I think are great. But in terms of like how it moves, I was kind of surprised. I'm like, this show is almost fucking 20 years old. And it still looks pretty strong, like at its worst. It looks like a high-end, like, internet production by today's standards.
Yeah, at its worst, it looks like...
It looks independent.
Yeah. Right. And, like I said, I think it's a really cool stylistic thing that they were doing, especially in terms of, like, you know, the cup runneth over of being, like, an anime black nerd and being like, oh, I wish there was a TV show for me. And then, like, holy shit, this is really, like, hitting that point, you know? Because it's like, oh, it's about black issues, but it has a very clearly, like, anime-influenced style.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But, like I said, like, I have a little bit of issue, I feel like, with how, like, the movement sometimes just feels a little cheap sometimes, you know what I'm saying? But it's like the actual...
I get that, given the medium, you know, it's just
And I think that's funny, thinking about, like, how much they were trying to rush him to make more seasons, because it was like, damn, this is... how he made it look with, like, the amount of time he was able to have. Like, geez, imagine if they had pushed him to do stuff even faster. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is a show that was very much, oh, we were just able to make it look as good as we were able to make it, you know?
Yeah, and just even talking about, like, the BTS from the first episode, seeing a lot of the names of the people that, like, worked on the show, they put a lot, like, maybe I'm just comparing it to, like, where these people are today, but they put a lot of kind of, like, heavy hitters in this, both, like, in front of it. Yeah, and, like, in front of and behind it, because, like, you know, Aaron did the story, but, like, Rodney fucking Barnes is credited as the screenplay writer on, honestly, most... of the, it's either him or Aaron do most of the first season, and there's a sprinkle of a couple of other writers. Now, Rodney Barnes, if people don't know, is, like, low-key industry legend who's done, like, a lot of black, you know, productions, including, like, he's a writer and producer. He's done Boondocks, like My Wife Gilmore and Kids. Type
where he's like, this nigga just behind the scenes. Like,
yeah, like My Wife and Kids, Everybody Hates Chris, Marvel's Runaways, American Gods, Wu-Tang's American Saga. Mm. He did that Lakers Dynasty show that aired recently. I think he has a comic book that he's also done that was released. I'm trying to remember the name of it. But yeah, he's like, he's very much down. I think he did Killadelphia. I think that was the book.
And then just talking about the voice talent, we've got, Granddad, played by,
John Witherspoon.
John Witherspoon. The name, like, I was like, wait, is his name really just John Witherspoon? Yeah, that's the man's name.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was like, it's really, you know what it is? I always confuse it with Reese Witherspoon.
Oh.
Two very different people.
Yes.
With the exact same last name.
The Spoons. The Spoon dynasty of Hollywood.
And they never did a movie together. Dang it. Yeah. Lost opportunity. Those very different personalities.
We got to have J.D. Witherspoon pick up the mantle and
for sure.
Do a movie like his son with like the Spoon dynasty of Hollywood.
But I fucking love John Witherspoon, and he's one of those like character actors who you always see in a million things. Of course, he's the dad in Friday. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like a whole bunch of shit in the 70s and 80s. And then it's kind of like this, I feel like, is his first real, like, this is the showcase of John Witherspoon. Because I'm thinking about like all the other stuff. Maybe you could say the Wayans Brothers show, he was like a big character there, but he always feels like a bit part player, and you never really get like him doing his thing. And, you know, I mean, Granddad is a lot, so I could imagine, you know, John Witherspoon as a character is a very particular person. So I could imagine it being like, maybe he couldn't carry a whole show doing this, but like with the writing of how this show works, like it's the Pasha meme of just like, oh, this is the perfect way to use your John Witherspoon. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
No, he, like, everybody is exceptionally well cast. Like Regina King as Huey and Riley was fucking incredible.
Yeah, I love, and it's one of those things where, like, Riley always hits me a little odd, because it always feels a little bit like Riley's being a little overdone of, like, the you know, 8-year-old thug, you know what I'm saying, the hyper wannabe thug, you know, you ain't gonna get no bitches, ain't gonna get no paper, you feel me, you know, but then when you hear Huey's voice, and just how, you know, quiet and slightly, you know what I'm saying, reserved.
Yeah, he's a lot more reserved.
And then you think about the fact, like, oh, wait, that's the same person? Like, that's what kind of makes you respect it again, you know, you're like, wait a minute.
and it's also, it's just like in terms of just the characterization of Huey and Riley, we also have to consider where black culture was when this was produced, which would have been like late 04, early 05.
Right.
Black culture. So early 2000, like what was it? Crunk era. Like
BET, to categorize. You know,
it's like peak BET crunk era hip hop black culture. So the fact that like this would be pretty radical by those standards, and this is a satire, which is like incredibly. Did you, while we're talking BTS, did you get a chance to see the original pilot that I was telling you about?
Yes, I did.
On YouTube with Alicia Keys as the original, and the differences in the character design.
Alicia Keys doing the voice?
That was Alicia Keys. That was originally really Huey and Riley, and then And then for the actual one, because I don't think they could get her because of scheduling or something, she got recast and it got Regina King, who, and Alicia Keys was good. I think Regina took a lot of beats of what she, Alicia initially did, yeah, and made it great. Like, I think Alicia Keys actually did pretty good with, you know, what it was at the time. And it was a lot more segmented, because I think this was like the pitch pilot that was supposed to go to Fox before it moved over to Adult Swim, yeah, and all that and, jazz. And
the, I will say the animation looks pretty good.
It was still pretty good for a pilot.
Like, I dare say it's a bit more fluid than the actual show itself, which is kind of weird. But I guess it's like, you only have 6 minutes, you know, you could probably take more time to, like, really make it look good. Because I remember Riley's braids, like, the way they moved around looked really cool. I was like, oh, wow, they're really, like, making this look good, you know what I mean?
But yeah, it's like comparing even just the aspects of the test pilot versus the final version we got with, like, Garden Party. And I'd say most of it pulls over. Like, there's some pretty significant differences in terms of, like,
stylistically it's the same, but like it's not the same, like, jokes necessarily. I think they probably use some of the bits like later on in the season, but like the general idea of, like, it seems like they're, if you watch the pilot, it looks like these were supposed to be like interstitials or something like that. Like,
it was more like a sizzle reel than like an actual episode. I think that's how it was kind of done, is just like, this is basically a sample of what you would get if you give us a full season. You're going to get things like this.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting, like, they kind of set up the Riley having a crush on Jasmine thing, and the pilot, and they kind of drop that where, you know, in the show, it's just kind of Jasmine kind of, like, going, like,
And I think while we're talking about, like, the differences and, like, characterization, I think that's something that's interesting, is in the original pilot, it's played a little bit more mutually, like, faintly, kind of like how kids would have a crush. And now Jasmine doesn't appear in, like, the first episode, and I'm sure at some point when she shows up, we'll get to her. But it's just like, like, Huey is definitely, like, I hate to say it, he's like a proto Umar Johnson, in terms of just like how he navigates things, and particularly, like, you know, because, you know, Umar is famous, like, one liners, like, you know, it's like politics over punani, you know, it's choice over coochie, you know, it's like that type of shit. So it's funny.
Meanwhile, he's like hiring prostitutes as a private life and all that type of shit.
It's like, you know, it's the irony that Umar Johnson, like, we a lot of black folk don't take him seriously because they think he's childish or juvenile. And then Huey is like a filtered version of that.
Well, no. I would actually give Huey more credit. I would say that Dr. Umar is the grifter, the obvious grifter version of that, where it's like, this guy's clearly just kind of, you know, sniffing his own shit and just doing the, we've got a hyper, basically, we've got to do black fascism to counteract the white fascism we've been dealing with. That's basically what his deal is. And Huey is what that guy, what Umar is, like, pretend, like, aiming for in real life of, like, well, if so, I mean, it's not like, you know, black revolutionary ideas are just, you know, Umar Johnson and fucking Reverend Al Sharpton, you know what I'm saying? There are actual principles to it. And now, what I think is interesting to me about Huey is that the way he gets used in the show, his character arc in the show, I feel like he, like, you know, you would assume it just to be the black radical revolutionary who's just gonna, like, he's always gonna be about his business all the time. But for a lot of the show, he honestly feels like his black revolutionary isms gets undercut, especially in this first episode, where it's like,
how it opens with his dreams about literally disrupting.
Yeah, like, he's like, aha, I'm going to go to, you know, a bunch of white people and tell them the harsh truths, and they're going to riot because white people just ain't comfortable with the black revolutionary giving them the real tea. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what his, you know, the setup of, you know, what his, you would expect his static character to be of the, oh, he's always going to be the one on top who's, like, trying to school people as to what's going on. But as the show goes, he is, like, frequently a person who's not listened to. He is ignored. Like, he's not treated the guy who knows everything. He's just kind of treated like, Huey, don't nobody listen to you. You
know? Yeah, and it doesn't help that he's a kid, but I think even if you take into account, like, actual people that are, like, you know, advocates for social change and revolution and justice, like, a lot of people see him as kind of buzzkills. Like, an example I'll use that's, like, recent and also animated related is Spider-Punk from Across the Spider-Verse. And people are like, wow, he's so cool. And he's so like against the system and radical. I'm like, I know five people like that in real life, and you fucking hate them. You do not like these people in practice. You like it conceptually. It's like no, it's like they look like that. They go out to protests. They organize. You know, they go to marches. They donate to like those that need. They all have natural hair. You know, they don't fit your aesthetic or your binary or whatever. You don't like them in practice. And it's like someone like Huey, you like. Especially because it's a kid, you're already not going to take him seriously. Now it's a kid that kind of, you know, is maybe posturing. Like, Huey's not wrong, but I think what is interesting, and I think this
he's
kind
an
of,
idealized version of the black, you know, revolutionary. But you know what I mean? Because he's a kid, he is the opposite of Riley, who has you know, the stars in his eyes are the rappers of the day who are like, oh man, he's going to be just like them. And for Huey, it's the black revolutionaries. I saw all these videos of the 70s of white people getting mad when black people spoke the truth. So now I'm going to speak the truth in their face. And then, you know, well, in his dream, of course, you know, the white people riot, they go freaking insane. A guy set on fire randomly. This is a guy running around on fire.
That was funny.
That's the humor that I love about the show. How is like it goes for it in terms of like, you know, bonkers animation of like, no, let's have the, like in real life, you would do like an airplane type gag of like, oh, the people are fighting and here's a guy running around that's on fire randomly. Like, yes, let's actually do that, you know?
Yeah, it's like they lean into the silly aspect with the series, with the other stuff. But I think what's interesting, particularly about like Huey's mentality, and this says a lot about like his psyche, because he's like, he's a 9-year-old, you know, black revolutionary. What I think is interesting is that his dream is not about, you know, it's not Martin Luther King, kumbaya, hand-holding, everyone gets along. His dream is disruption. His dream is bucking against the status quo and people being bothered by it. It's not, wow, Huey, that, you know, it's like, it's not, wow, Huey, that's a great point. We're going to change our ways and stop being racist and we're going to fix the system, you know, because Ronald Reagan is the devil. It's, oh my God, this black child has broken white supremacy. And
right.
He's like, yeah, because it's now it's just like, because no one listened to him, it's just vindication. That's what his dream is, for somebody to be like, it's like not to validate that, it's not to actually have progress. And I think that's kind of what some of the commentary is you're not dreaming of actual change. You're dreaming of the chaos that comes from disruption and discomfort that's necessary
for
change to
happen. It's the grievance politics of, I don't actually want to make things, you know, equal. I want them to be angry
the way
I was angry.
I want
you
to be upset with me.
Yeah.
Because of how bad things are. It's like, it's not, I don't want you to change. I want you to be upset with me, which it's like, and yeah, like you said, it's that grievance politics versus Riley, who's just blissfully surface level, BET, just straight flagrant, like hip hop, regular nigga.
Yeah. The original, pilot had him watching some TV show that sounded like Monique was doing the voice. Was like, oh girl, you know, I'm stuck two fat people trying to go through a door at the same time. And like, oh girl, I'm stuck. Oh no, I just farted. And it's like, I love how that classic fart sound, the like, we're really hitting for the fucking, we're really getting the cheap seats with this comedy, you know, but played on purpose, like in that pilot's gig. You know,
I think what helps is like because of the two people that are really fleshing out the story. You got Aaron Magruder, who's been used to doing this satire for a long time. And then you have Rodney Barnes, who has literally worked on sitcoms. Like he worked on, you know, My Wife and Kids and shit like that. So it's like it's if anyone's going to know how to, I think, do a satire of sitcoms like The Boondocks, particularly black like sitcoms, it's gonna be someone that works on a sitcom.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because the first scene where Ed Wensler shows up, it kind of seems like that sort of, oh, the boss coming over for dinner and Seymour, what's that, you know what I mean? Like, but it's played in a more stark way, where, you know, Ed Wensler comes over, he's talking to granddad, and you know, he's giving him a very white guy who was born here and now I'm gonna die here, and you know, I'm very selective about who I bring in my family here, you know, because he's talking all this stuff about how, like, you know, he basically comes in saying like, you know, I'm one voiced by Ed Asner, by the way. Much
fucking
respect to him.
Perfect. Perfect cast, like
so incredible.
God, I'm like, oh my god, I miss Ed Asner so much. He's so fucking good.
He's just what you need. He is just the white man you need for this role.
Like we were talking about, like stellar casting across the show, and I still agree by that. And we'll get to Ed Wunstler the third in a moment. But Ed Asner as Ed Wunstler has, especially like later on when we get to the Luther Burger episode, like his delivery on certain lines
classic,
is fucking hilarious.
Classic.
Like, just sitting there, it's like, now Robert Freeman, are you a homosexual perchance?
Like,
God damn it.
The way he, well, you know what, let's just talk about it, because essentially what happens as the lead up to it is, you know, Riley and Huey are on the roof and they're really angry about, like, you know, moving into this new white neighborhood. Basically, granddad spent all their inheritance on getting this really nice house, essentially. And they're on the roof, like, really angry about it, and like, fuck all this. And they're, like, kind of looking around with their little, what is that, BB gun scope? And they're looking at white people.
I think it was a BB gun scope.
Yeah, it looks like a freaking AK-47 or some shit. And Riley's making all these white people observations, and it's one of those, like, this is so what a kid would say as a, you know, white people observation. White people, I know about white people, they say the whole word. Like, that was fucking hilarious. Like, I love that flip on the, you know, oh, you know, those black people speaking broken English. It's just like, yeah, but why are you over enunciating the shit? Like, we know what the word is.
That and also just like white people love, which I hate. I don't want to be that guy. But look, like, I white people do love cheese.
Yeah.
Look, man. There's a reason charcuterie boards have been so big recently. Did you just offer me a piece of cheese, Robert?
Yeah. The fact that charcuterie is a specialty word that just means, oh, the board where you chop the cheese, you know?
Yeah, it's just like, hey, man, you know, what was that old rap bar? It's like, it's like, you know, one thing about these crackers, they always study chasing the cheddar or something like that.
No. Look, we have to counteract the black people like chicken stereotype with something. That's essentially what the show is. It's like the, oh yeah, white people. Well, we got jokes about you, actually.
Yeah, and I feel like that's a pretty fair one, because I don't think I know, even white people with lactose intolerance, they still eat cheese.
Yeah, they do. I've heard it so much of like, oh, I'm lactose intolerant, but I still get some cheese.
But like, I'm going to do it anyway. It's like, I feel like that's a fair observation. Here, look, everybody loves chicken. Everybody loves cheese. But there's a larger demographic than others that may partake to certain foods. Mediterranean people, they really fuck with chickpeas.
Mm.
Like,
everybody, look, here's the thing. Everybody got their thing, and white people, you know, don't want to have their thing. That's the thing. They want to be, no, I'm the neutral. No, you got one too.
Like, look, Asian people, they do great work with rice.
They fuck up some noodles. You know what I'm saying?
Like, everybody got their thing.
Yeah.
You know?
And then another one he says is, black and white people, they take time out to study. And that was one that especially hit me. Where I was like, man, do you remember, like, back in the day, it would be like, oh, there's no homework due this weekend, but you just have to study for the subject. And I was like, huh? You just want me to, on my own accord, just read the textbook? There's nothing that's actually due? Well, then I'm not going to do that. I'll watch music videos all weekend.
Unless we'll be done. It's like, oh, I don't have to be accountable for this? Oh, buddy.
Yeah, exactly.
You think I'm going to stick to it? No.
Oh, man. But going into it proper, so Wunstler comes over to visit. His opening gambit is like, I'm Ed Wunstler. It's like, so? Granddad's like, and what does that mean to me? He's like, I own the bank that owns your house.
And then immediately lets him in.
Come right this way, Mr. I own everything.
Which, again, it's like slick little lines like that. It's like, oh, come on, man.
So they sit down and, you know, he starts talking to him about, it's sort of like a, originally, I really like the voice acting here. It feels very, like, intentional with how, originally, Ed Asner, he's speaking very, like, normally and conversationally. It's just like, you know, I was born, you know, my family came here 170 years ago. They, you know, settled here. And, you know, I was born here and raised here. And, you know, I consider this place my family. And I'm very selective about who I let in my family. And then he gets to the next point where he starts saying the, are you a homosexual or do you have a lover with you right now? Which so feels like the, oh, I have to button up and say this really nicely to not, you know, actively let on the fact that I don't want gay people around me, but I have to right. ask the question in the very sort of doing the census survey sort of way, you know, but I'm really just trying to root this out. But right before that, you could hear the sneer in his voice as he was talking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think what it exemplifies here is, God, who had a bit about it? Fucking Patton Oswalt had a bit about it, about, like, bigotry disguised as intellectualism.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just kind of one of those things of, like, if you phrase it very properly and cleanly, you can get away with it. Basically being a NIMBY for people that you don't like, because he immediately asks him, but not just about like gay people, but also about like Muslims. It's like he's like, well, you know, I could appreciate the masculine form, but I've never been interested in that.
I gotta ask a question real quick, because he says, you know, yeah, are you a homosexual? Do you have a lover now? And he says, oh, gay? Oh no, I mean, I happen to think a guy looks good with a ponytail and good hair, but no, not gay. And I remember hearing that line, and I was like, wasn't that like an Ice-T line or something like that? Didn't Ice-T say that? Like, that feels so particular. That has to be from a rap song or something. Like, I could have swear I heard or read some crack article that was about, like, Ice-T had this, you know, those, like, oh, weirdly, you know, gay-sounding lines in rap songs. And I could have swore I heard, like, there was an Ice-T line where it's like, you know, I think a good, yeah, I happen to think a guy looks good with a nice hair with a ponytail or something like that. Or am I confusing that because Ice-T just had a ponytail back then? And I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm just like confusing.
Because I know Meg has a line that's like slick back ponytail, Ice-T. So it could have very well been an Ice-T reference. Which would make sense for the time. I think that's around the time you started on SVU.
But this show does that a lot, where they'll, like, say something, and then it's like, if you know black culture, you would know that that's a reference to a thing. Like, you know, they'll just, like, reference obscure Wu-Tang Clan songs and shit, where it's just like, oh. Like, you know.
Or just have them in the episode or some shit.
Yeah. So at first, you know, oh yeah, he says the thing of like, you know, are you a homosexual? Da, da, da. And then he says, it's funny you were saying about the, oh yeah, you know, people kind of use the slick words, the Patton Oswalt thing to kind of get around things. But he barely covers himself up. He says, would you happen to affiliate or associate with Arabs, Muslims, or anyone of terrorist descent?
Yeah, but basically just let the whole veil fall, where it's just like, well, now that I know that I can be myself.
Right, yeah.
He's offering me cheese, he says, I can be myself. I don't know.
Yeah, because he says, oh, how do you feel about gay marriage? He's like, well, I don't think anyone should get married. And it's like, okay, now that we're cool, let's get to the real thing, you know?
Let's get to the brass tacks. What about the sand people?
Like, look, this Bush era politics, like, this show is so getting in your face with it, and I fucking love it. And what I love about it is that there was a later episode where Ed Wensler III, his grandson, says this man who's obviously a terrorist descent, voiced by Charlie Murphy.
Yes.
And what's so funny, and who shows up later in this episode, again, incredible voice talent casting, he doesn't say that in this episode, but Ed Wensler, the grandpa, says it first, and I forgot about that, because I remember watching the episode later on where Ed Wensler III says that this man who's obviously a terrorist descent, and I remember being like, oh, of course Ed Wensler, the dumb, you know, grandkid would say that, but then to see Wensler, the grandpa, says it in the first fucking episode. It's like, wow.
You know? Oh my God. What? I didn't even realize that that's a
setup. Yeah, it's a callback that happens later. Yeah.
Yeah. With that. Yeah. That, I know the exact episode you're talking about, like, right? Him and Rummy robbing the store.
Yeah.
And that, God, what? I think that was a whole Bad Boys parody, low key.
I think so. Yeah. What is it? Wensler invites granddad to this garden party, and you know, granddad kind of like tells the kids, you know, it's like, oh, you guys better ship up and shape right, because I don't want you guys acting out and da da da. And he starts talking, and it's one of those things where, like, Riley and Huey are just kind of talking to each other while he's talking to them. And he's like, what does he mean by not acting a fool? He says, don't say nigga. He's like, that's just what I'm talking about. You know,
was that the one with, God, that line is so fucking funny, where Riley's like, it's like, what? Are you ashamed of us? Very.
Very. Just immediately
what
says
do you
it.
Mean embarrass you, granddad? Are you ashamed of us?
Very. But But I love it. And what I love here is that this kind of leads to a mini convo where he's saying, like, you know, I spent all your inheritance on this really nice house, so you two are going to appreciate it. And he says, like, oh, you know, we didn't ask to move here, Granddad. He's like, well, we didn't ask to get attacked by dogs and sprayed with fire hoses in order for you right. to, you know, even be able to live in this white neighborhood. So, you know, you need to appreciate that. And then Huey, it's funny, Huey is the one who brings it up. He's like, oh, here we go. He's like, well, what do you mean? What are you talking about? He's like, I just feel like, you know, the people in the 60s are always trying to take credit for what happened to some people.
Oh, the way this episode... Talk about it.
I know. I was like, yo, let's talk about it here.
It's like, what was it that they said in Back to the Future? It's like, hey, you may not understand what this is now, but your grandkids are going to love
it. Yeah, right. but Granddad tries to assuage Huey's fears, you know, the new white man, he likes cheese. He's distinguished. I love that fucking delivery. He's distinguished.
God, this movie attacks in the first episode so many things that fucking bullshit magical Negro movie just failed to execute.
Oh, man.
In terms of like navigating things like microaggressions and right. like acceptability and respectability politics and things like that.
Yeah, you're right. This show really does just hit so many things quite perfectly. Some things not so perfectly, but we'll get to those episodes when we come to them.
But it's like, as far as the first episode in the pilot, it's like, I don't have any critiques unless I'm like nitpicking, because like even at the guard party in, I would say, like a 3-minute sequence after we're introduced to Ed Wetzler the Third and he's hanging out with Riley, which you could have an entire conversation about, like a fucking man child hanging out with a literal child, and they connect over like the juvenileness of like the costume of hood culture versus actual hood culture put on by like black and white people that live in the suburbs, which I think is a lot more relevant now than maybe, I don't know, maybe they're future seers or something. Cause I can't imagine this was a huge thing in 2005, but that's extremely relevant now to like people that cosplay being hood or like,
oh, I remember it being a thing. Also, just to let you know, it just started raining and I am in a car and the microphone is picking it up. And it's like a fuck, man.
Shit.
Because I'm looking down. You know what? We're going to fucking podcast through it. We're podcasting through like it's golf. We're
power through it. The power of room tone. And
this is
sample.
Raw podcasting, y'all. This is... All right.
Truly authentic. But it's, I think what's funny is like in a sequence that happens at the garden party where he shoots him with a shotgun out of a window, it like exemplifies the entire plot of American Psycho in about 90 seconds, where basically like no one has a reaction to it. And it's like, yeah, it's like as long as you have, you know, the complexion for protection and just like can afford all of the privileges that it extends, like you come from a rich background too, so like you have class and race on your side, no one really gives a shit what you do. And that's Ed Wetzler the Third's whole thing, to the point where it's like he can walk around and flaunt his granddad's money, cosplay being, you know, a gangster and shit, no one really cares. They're just kind of like whatever, there goes you know, Ed the Third doing his little thing, you know, speaking in his Ebonics and hippity hop lingo and whatnot. Is what, anyways, how about that cheese? Like, no one gives a shit. It's the whole plot of American Psycho, like a fantastic fucking 2-hour movie in 90 seconds, where it's like, whatever. He's one of us. It's the worst thing that could happen.
And just to call back to the flashback that Granddad has to the civil rights era, because that was the thing that we didn't bring up real quick. We didn't wrap that up, because I love it, just the sort of, you know, the kids give a little pushback to him, and I love how like this clip kind of becomes the perfect send up of the moralizing older black people who want to take credit for the hardships of the past, but when you look at it, it's like, wait, not only were they not that active in the modern day, some of them seem like a bunch of opportunistic hypocrites with their own selfish needs, Reverend Al Sharpton. Oh, excuse me, that just kind of fell out. But you know what I'm trying to... You know what I'm saying? But especially the bit being that he's like, oh, you know, everyone's getting attacked by, you know, the fire hoses and stuff, and he runs up, he's got his raincoat on, it's like, what the fuck? Where were you? And he's like, oh, I went to get my raincoat. And it's one of those things where, like, you almost could give him credit to be like, oh, I mean, I get, you know, actually, well, yeah, well, I can see
me. He needed his raincoat.
He said, like, look, hey, the policeman doing this thing with the fire hoses all week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but then you remember that, like, they used to march across, like, the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Exactly. Like, where the fuck was you
in
this
the
whole
middle
time?
Of the summertime? Like, yeah, as somebody that's walked that bridge twice, when you realize, like, they did this in suits and ties in the summertime, fuck that. Spiritually right? Stronger than, like, fucking the Marines. What in the shit?
Fucking A. But, yeah, that bit was a little hilarious. And just an indication of how, like, intense this show's gonna get, because, you know, with the Huey character, you assume it's gonna be, yeah, we're gonna be sending up all the, you know, all those ignorant black people who don't know better. But it also turns a bit of a cynical eye to the, you know, revolutionaries and whatnot, like, in a way that's really interesting, you know? Like,
because I think that's what Huey kind of exemplifies, is that you can, there are people that like you said, they're just kind of like grievance activists that kind of let the, what is that phrase? I think it's a quote. I want to say it's James Baldwin, but I could very much be wrong. Where it's like, you know, to be black in America is to be in a constant state of rage. And I think Huey, in a sense, kind of exemplifies that. But the thing is, you have to, like, being in a marginalized group in America and being aware of all the injustices, you, for your own sanity, you can't preoccupy yourself with, like, trying to be the one person that's going to change the world. You can't make yourself like the super nigga that's like, aha, as soon as I tell people that the system is broken, then everything is going to change. It's like, no, like it's a lot more work than that, buddy. Sorry. Think about how many people it took to get civil rights and had to die to get the Civil Rights Act just to be like a thing that was considered.
And even then someone had to, a couple people just needed to get shot. That literally just needed to happen. It was just like,
it took three assassinations, including a fucking president.
Yeah, it's like, I guess we should give him the rights. Fine. It's like,
like, all right, I guess.
I guess it'll be really embarrassing if we don't now. Like, you know?
It's like, it took the one after Kennedy. Kennedy was the one that met with King, and they're both fucking died before it got signed, if I recall.
Oh, man. But,
Huey, I think, immaturely, you know, because he's fucking nine. Like,
yeah,
you know,
that's the, well, I think the show allows them to be caricatures of these different sides of, you know what I'm saying?
Well,
blackness,
I think that's,
because
that's
these are kids,
works.
Right? Like, yeah.
I think that's one of the greatest strengths of it, is because they're kids. And it's not to say that the people that, like, are, you know, fall into hood stereotypes or revolutionary stereotypes are childish, but it's like, if you view the world, if you view your blackness only through this kind of dichotomy of you're either a thug or a revolutionary, you know, it's like, you're not really holding space for the diversity of it. And it's like, and I think while there is a lot of validity to those identities, that does not encompass all of your blackness.
So
you can't look at yourself, you know, through that lens. It's like, you know, and there's a whole spectrum, but within both of those sides, there's not a right or wrong. There's plenty to critique about it, but there are also things that are like fair game. Like, you know, it's like, if you're from the hood, you should be allowed to enjoy BET and Tyler Perry movies. You should
like,
be allowed
look, to I enjoy- watch my fucking BET all the goddamn time. Now like, I still joked on the dumb shit when it got really dumb, but there was still some good shit on there. You know?
It's like Half and Half, Martin, Jamie Foxx show, The Parkers. Like, we should,
you know, 106
on one.
In Park, some of the videos, you know, the Freestyle like Fridays, that was cool for a while.
You know, it's like BET had like a solid run up until like 2007. But, but it's like, there's plenty of stuff to critique where it's like, yeah, maybe it's like, you know, BET After Dark probably should have been selling some of that shit. But
I'm gonna say it. White people got their trash TV. Why can't we have our
exactly? They got Maury, fucking Jerry Springer.
What is all that?
What's it called? Dr. Phil. Fucking, you know, late night TV. It's like, yeah, we should all be allowed to have our Married with Children. There's nothing
Jerry Springer,
wrong with that.
Yeah, for sure.
But it also means that it's like, there's room for critique. There's room for growth.
In fact, what I think, well, and now the thing that black people specifically have to deal with is the stereotyping of, you know, you being black. See, that's where the specific want to push against that is. No, I'm not that stereotype that you think of me because I'm so, you know, and you ironically end up defining yourself against still what white people expect of you, right? But, you know, shit, I forgot where I was going with that point ultimately, but I want to get back to the episode because there's a certain character we forgot to bring up yet. Allow me to play the music.
Oh my God.
I love Man,
I cannot believe. I cannot believe we had a member of the Supreme Court Justice show up on the Boondocks.
Oh, Mr. Clarence Thomas right this way.
We had Clarence Thomas visiting the first... this show is chock full of cameos.
I'm sorry, real quick thing. Remember in the 90s when Clarence Thomas was supposed to be, he's a black justice, so that means everything's cool, right? Remember that? I specifically remember hearing that was supposed to be like, look, there's a black justice now. And then immediately was like, hey, what's this thing with Anita Hill? Hey, this guy kind of sucks.
Oh, God, yeah. No, the one that comes to mind for me was Condoleezza Rice during that period because she was in the Bush administration. But yeah, definitely fucking Clarence Thomas and Anita Hill just like, you know what? I don't think she's telling the truth. It's like, what?
I just, you know, massage her, put a pube in her Pepsi or some shit like that. No big deal.
Yeah, but yeah, the introduction of the
Uncle,
fucking...
Yes.
Uncle Ruckus. Man, yeah, that's right. Played by Gary Anthony Williams. What an
incredible
talent.
Voice talent.
Incredible voice talent. You may also know him as one of the gay stewardesses in Soul Plane. And
oh, God,
Science Brother from Undercover Brother. Yes, both of those were him.
We got to get work, all right? They got to get work, all right?
I'm not blaming him for playing those parts.
There's only nine black movies that comes out every other year back then. Especially back then. Oh, my God.
Look. Soul Plane set our people back a good 5 years, and I stand on that. However, I will always support black people getting a check.
Sure. Like,
I hate that Magical Negro movie, but black people got paid. That is the balance that
this is
I
what
have
we have to deal
with.
Yeah, with being black, it's like, look, I'm a root for you, but I'm not gonna act like I didn't see what I just saw.
Yeah, it's like I'm rooting for you, but I'm rooting on your project's downfall. So it's not you, but whoever did this bullshit needs to be reprimanded. Good I'm not Lord. Blaming the talent, but I am blaming the writers.
Yeah, but what was it? Oh, yeah. So essentially, yeah, he's the Cartman of this show.
I didn't realize this was their first meeting him in this episode.
Yeah.
Until like actually watching, I'm like, oh, my God, this is how they met.
And you know what's this is what I think is interesting to me, right? Because Uncle Ruckus, I think, especially with how they write the white people around him, exposes a sort of like trying to figure out how to explain it. Because Uncle Ruckus is the self-hating black guy, and the white people around him don't do the stereotypical, oh, that's right, black guy, that's right. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
there isn't that.
He understands.
In fact, the thing about Uncle Ruckus is that he is the hyper, like, you know, putting down black people. And then the white people around him are like, don't be ridiculous, Uncle Ruckus. Like, stop doing that. You're too much, Uncle Ruckus. Like, I find that so interesting in such a dark way where it's like he's hyper doing the thing that, you know, he's been trained like an attack dog to do. Like, black people here, code black. But then when you hear the white guy, you know, the white guy's voice over the speaker thing, he's like, what the hell is a code black? What the hell are you talking about, Ruckus? You know, you get what I mean in terms of like, it's Uncle Ruckus, like, overly watchdogging shit as the black guy who feels like he needs to, you know, keep out all the other black people or keep them in their place. You know what I'm saying? It's the sort of, like,
I'd say, like, seldom is Ruckus very much, like, that. Ruckus is more of a tool to be used by, like, the white people in positions of power. And that's about it. They don't
that you say positions of power, because there's different levels of white people on this shit, right? There's Wunsler is a very specific type of white person, right? He is the legit megalomaniacal capitalist who wants everything his way in his neighborhood, right? He is the active, like, evil in the white supremacist, like, you know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, Uncle Ruckus is an impotent member of this sort of thing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's really Ed Wensler who's, you know, controlling the show, making this white Woodcrest neighborhood minus any blackness to try to be like, all right, this is what normal is supposed to be for me. You know what I'm saying? But not every show, not every white person on the show is written to be like that, like, actively correct. Aware of the racial dynamics and playing into it. In fact, what I find interesting about how the show, especially a lot of the background white characters, whenever you hear them like talk about black topics, they don't sound malicious. They sound kind of like clueless and generally naive on how to interact with black culture. Like, you notice that, right? We're like, they're not like the mean. Average they're just kind of like
the show is like relatively out the loop on whatever the fuck is going on in the world of the black characters, which is just like, what, God, who said it? Bill Burr was like, had a bit, was just talking about, it's like, you know, it's like, not paying attention about the impact on our little white world of you and me, like when he made a joke and he felt all right. The white people's like buttholes clench up because he was talking about black people.
He knows how to do that,
but it's just like, it's like most of the white characters, like the average white person, it's not to say that they don't get, it's like they don't know.
It's like
they don't show and don't care about what goes on. In
but I think it's interesting that the show, especially in the first episode, sets out this specific dynamic. The white power structure, you know, the people who keep that in place, like Wensler, they're the tight-fisted capitalists who know exactly what they're doing when they actively create these rich communities that keep out the undesirables. But at the same time, they have a general white population of people that don't actively, like, participate in that malice towards black people because they don't need to. They're just being corralled, you know what I'm saying? Into, they're the good people doing the thing they're supposed to do. Good. Create this good society. Don't even think about the racial aspect of it. We've already taken care of it for you. You know what I'm trying to say? And so it's like, it's not a malicious thing on their part. It's just they're being kept ignorant because they don't need to know, you know?
Yeah, they're kind of like passive participants in the effects of the supremacy that's imposed by those with, like, higher influence due to class. So it's like someone like Wensler is someone that's directly engaged. He's keeping people out. He's like going into homes. He's running the fucking bank.
He literally goes into people's homes the first day they move in, like driving down the street. He didn't live next door. He drove his limousine all the way over
to
there.
His house. He's like, well, there's a property that I own and I better investigate because a young African American lived there. And then it's like the other white people that are there that were invited, it's like they're passive participants. They don't know that this shit is going on. Now it's like it makes them kind of like inactively complicit, but not in a actively malicious way. It's just kind of like, they're not thinking about the fact that there's no black people here.
Yeah. Because they'll see
a black guy and be like, huh, he must be new. Interesting. Yeah. And then not think of it. So it's like they're not maliciously being like, get out of here, brown man. It's like, maybe I should go check out the neighbor. You know, he seems new to Woodcrest.
Yeah, because the people who want to keep it that way, a lot of people in power, they're doing that. Like, they've got the project in, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, you get the idea. But, like, ultimately to say is that,
this is the passive liberal kind of thing, which, like, it's like, I support, you know, black people's right to speak and live in this. Matter of fact, I voted for Barack Obama.
Right. Meanwhile, where is it? Where are they living in this neighborhood? You know, made by this founder once. Like, you could probably find the information about, you know what I'm saying, this guy's politics if you wanted to. They don't need to. They're doing their jogs, you know.
Yeah, it's a bunch of white liberals.
Now, what I think is interesting about how Uncle Ruckus is characterized, I feel like in this first episode, he's the most aware of his blackness. And every other episode, he swears he's a white guy. You know what I'm saying? Because in this first episode, and I think that, you know, they were doing it for the sake of, like, doing the trope of this character of the, the self-hating black guy who's going to give Freeman shit, you know, the Robert Freeman shit the whole time to kind of be like, oh, you one of them light-skinned, you know, niggas. Of course they like you.
You one of them high yellow types.
Yeah, the way he goes. And I was like,
one of them highfalutin yellow bone, you and your yellow bone shit. You and your little colored boys.
And that's an interesting dynamic, too. It's like, right, Uncle Ruckus is not a light-skinned dude. He's a dark-skinned guy. That probably, also really plays into things right now.
Yeah, it's just like you got so many things that could be against Uncle Ruckus. It's just like ageism, fat phobia, colorism, texture, like featureism. Cause, you know, he has a disability because of his
in the eye that looks like a donut.
Yeah, because of his lazy eye. You know, it's just like he has a lot against him from the world. And this is way before we even get his backstory. And it's
oh my God, the saddest thing in the world.
Incredibly sad. But it's like you could see, it's like, before you even get his backstory, like, the world will not be kind to somebody that looks like you.
Yeah, right.
Like, and at all.
I think it's interesting. In the pilot, they kind of have a segment where Granddad goes over to Uncle Ruckus' place. And they don't really establish their relationship, like, how they know each other or anything like that up to that point. But it was kind of like I'm hanging out at your place. And then, like, someone throws a baseball through his window. And it's kind of like, and you're thinking, like, is someone, like, hating on him? It's like, no, it's just the neighborhood kids who don't give a shit about him and treat him like shit. Like, and like that to me feels like part of this is the passive, like they're not, that the kid who threw the ball through his window isn't hating him because he's black. He's just hating him because, well, that's the help who does all the jobs. So I don't really need to care about that guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you could get that energy in there, you know, like.
And what I find fascinating is, like, throughout the show, Granddad and Ruckus are, like, sort of friends.
Yeah, they hang out. It's such a, like...
Like, they hang out like and, like, you, play chess in the park. We're the only black
people, so we kind of have to hang out. It's that thing, you know?
Like, it's so weird just because, like, they're... Where they stand in how the world treats them clearly is doesn't so like him. Fucking opposed.
Uncle Ruckus clearly doesn't like him, but...
But I guess it's like, it's kind of one of the...
thing. We're the only black people here, so we have to talk to each other.
Well, I think that's one component of it. But you know what I think it's more of? It's a dude thing. If we don't talk about the shit that, like, will antagonize us, we'll get along fine for the most part. It's like, if we don't talk about, like, the fact that Ruckus hates black people and that I hate, you know, self-hating black men. You and me
looking at each other like we like each other.
Yeah, as long as we don't talk about politics, basically, we're cool. And there are men that will maintain friendships like that.
Yeah.
It's like, as long as we don't talk about this one thing, we'll be cool. And those are friendships that can maintain. It's like, oh, that's Frank. Yeah, as long as we don't talk about gay people, we're good. We have you got family members like that. It's like, yeah, we don't talk about trans people around Uncle Dave. But other than that, he's a good guy. It's like, wait, what was that part you just mentioned? It's like, I think that's part of, like, it's not just, you know, they're the only two black people that are around, but that is a big thing. But I think it's also, I think a guy thing of just, if we don't talk about it, we can get along fine. And it's like, as long as we don't talk about race, we'll be okay. Trying to act like that shit should be normal. And I'd say in a case like this, where it's like, look, if the whole community is going to turn on me, you know, it's like, well, I know Ruckus isn't going to be on my side. So I guess there's kind of a solidarity in that. It's like, well, you know, it's like, I know he's not going to look out for me. So I don't have to. So other than that, we'll be fine. It's like until like Tom shows up later in the show.
Yeah. Yeah. So they go to the party and Granddad's kind of seeing, you know, Riley and Huey looking like they're kind of about to act up. Ed Wunsler, you know, kind of takes him aside and says like, oh, you look nervous. Do I make you nervous? Free man. And I know he keeps saying it like that. And
the emphasis on free man.
Free man. And it was specifically, of course, you know, if you know your black history, like it immediately calls you to the, oh yeah, during slavery times, there would be, oh, some niggas got their papers. So you're a free man, you know, you're a freedman, you know? And so it's like, wow, the fact that they named the character Freeman, you know what I'm saying?
Riley had Robert been on purpose even in the strip. And like, oh, it gets even funnier to think that one of their ancestors is named Catch Her Freeman.
Oh my God. So they we have the ultimate part where, oh, Huey's about to live his dream of going up to the microphone and telling white people what's what. But then it doesn't go how he wants. And you know, they just start clapping and they're like, "Oh, you speak so well. Oh, what an intelligent lad." Yeah,
and,
you know,
and they say that a lot, and I'm just like,
I think at one point he's talking to a clergyman and specifically saying, "I think Jesus is black. Doesn't that offend you?" And he's just like, "You speak so well, young man. Oh, you're such an upstart, you know?" And later on, he kind of granddad is about to reprimand him and be like, you know, don't you dare, you know, tell the truth to the white man. What do you think you're doing? And it's like, oh, man, these people ain't got no problem with it. They're rich and they have no problems. Nothing I can say is going to like offend them. And I was like, that's such a brilliant like flip of like the first episode. Huey is realizing how impotent his black rage is in terms of like just trying to stick it to him, you know, like, ooh, giving them the uncomfortable truth. And oh, right, they don't have any real problems. They're in this real nice place. You know, this isn't the 70s where you can, oh no, the black guy with the afro, that's kind of scary. You know, like now it's like, no, these people are fine and you're not going to threaten them. Like, there's nothing you can do that's going to threaten what they have.
Especially because like the information he kind of brings them isn't going to impact, it's not going to change anything about their lives or lifestyle. It's like Ronald Reagan is the devil, Jesus was black, you know, it's like, okay.
And, like, first and the of all, government did 9/11. Thank you for your time and attention.
Yeah, and it's just like, how does that
impact? What I like about that is it feels to me like a calling of, like, I'm sure Aaron Magruder, as someone trying to make a TV show where it's like, oh, I'm going to talk about black issues, and that's gonna make him angry, right? And then it's like, oh, the white people that I'm, like, pitching this to, this doesn't seem to be making this uncomfortable. They seem to just be like, yeah, sure, that's the new show you're going to be doing, fine. You know, like, I kind of get that feeling of, like, oh, I was trying to be subversive, and it seems like it's not really being as subversive as I would want it to be.
Yeah, that, you know? This had to have come from, like, some sort of actual conversation or something that
yeah, like the thing that I think would pierce the soul of the white man in Jonah, it's like, it's not doing it because, maybe they just don't care.
It's like, but here's the thing. Why should they?
Yeah.
Why would it matter to them? Why would it? What? Here's the thing. Ronald Reagan at this point was long dead. By 2005, he was dead, if I recall. So it's like,
yeah,
his presidential stint is over. It never really impacted white communities other than a skyrocketing sale in Arm & Hammer. But it's okay. So it's like 9/11 was 4 years before. All the people in Woodcrest are still alive. You know, it's like,
that's the closest you could get to that. But even then, it's just like, those people aren't in New York. You know what I mean?
And then it's like, Jesus was black. It's like, well, our church has a white Jesus. So you're 0-3. Like, they don't give
a exactly.
Shit.
What are you going to, you're not doing anything to us, actually. You know?
Yeah, it's just like, it's shit that it's just kind of like telling somebody shit that they don't care to know. It'd be different if it was like, you know, Ronald Reagan never had the best interests of, like, any, you know, the poor people at heart, and that impacts the rednecks. But that still wouldn't matter because they live in the fucking suburbs.
Yeah, and also, like, the specific point of, like, yeah, none of this affects them. And, like, this black revolutionary trying to, like, bring it to their faces, like, that feeling of, like, oh, this didn't matter. What? Nothing the thing that I was feeling was going to tear down their world didn't do it. So now what?
Yeah, it's like what, and because all they're gonna notice is like, wow, he's very eloquent for a 9-year-old.
Yeah,
he's
this
very
black man
well-spoken.
Who has no power and isn't gonna do anything anyway. Oh yeah, very well spoken.
it's like oh, look at that child. Like, it's, and, but again, it's like, that's what a child would think, is like, that I can change the world with like a sentence. Yeah. And it's like,
well,
maybe
now
you
that
watch
is
too much Dragon Ball Z.
I mean, we watch the show and we kind of think about, you know, in the same ways, you know, we watch South Park and you kind of think of them as grown characters because, well, they're just writers writing through what these kids are thinking. But the reality of the fact is, yeah, they are children. Like, yeah. It probably, like, this Huey really is the Rollo, you know what I'm saying, from Good Times, who's like, you know, to them, it's like, okay, buddy, sure, black revolutionary, sure, buddy, you know?
It's like, oh, he's... Because that's how the world will see you, is like, even if you're just if you're a grown adult black revolutionary, I think a lot of the world will see you as just like some juvenile person, like, well, they think they're going to make a difference. It's like, well, you said, it's like, you thought that out very well. What a nice speech. Anyways, like, back to this cheese
plate.
Yeah,
these are comfortable white people in a gated community. They're going to be fine, and they know they're going to be fine. In fact, whenever something does go wrong, I remember D.L. Hughley, you know, when there's a school shooting or something like that. I mean, back in the day when that was slightly less common, it would be like, here, how could this happen here? You know?
Yes.
It's the, we're so safe, this wasn't supposed to happen here. That was the phrase you used to hear, right? Like, this isn't supposed to happen to us, to those foreign countries, sure, but not us.
And the reason the words don't have power is because they don't have direct impact. Now, there is an episode later that involves spray painting. and like a Mr. Rogers knockoff.
Yeah.
Where like the HOA and everybody gets pissed. And you know why? Because it does impact their community. Because it's happening on their, like, you know, streets and their homes.
Now and they also have a reason to be invested. Those white people are definitely afraid of the people of terrorist descent.
Yeah, it's like that, and also it's just like they just hate people that like there's that that abandoned building in LA that like got a bunch of spray painters, and they're like, oh, we need to tear it down and cover it up. It's like, why? You aren't doing anything with it. Let them tag it.
The Muslim people that they're afraid of aren't around them. They are a cartoon boogeyman that they never actually, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Yeah. You're scared of invisible menaces, and you don't give a shit about things that, you know, impact other people because it's not convenient. It's like, you know, it's like you watch the news, they're telling you things to be afraid of that aren't a threat. And then someone tries to tell you that there's a history of problems and you don't care because it's not impacting you now.
Yeah, yeah.
So you've got, like, you're fighting imaginary ghosts when the real demons are right in your backyard, but you don't care because you play golf with them.
Then we got to get to Ed Wensler III, voiced by, at this point, probably the blackest voice in Hollywood at the time.
I would agree. One of two. The other one shows up later.
indeed. But not in this episode. But what I think is hilarious about this, first of all, just the fact that, like, they got Charlie Murphy. And I was thinking about this. I was like, wait, Charlie Murphy, he's Eddie Murphy's older brother. Yeah. Like, how the hell did he get a second wind in the 2000s? I mean, it's because of the Chappelle Show, but I just think it's so funny when he's on, like, the Boondocks, just kind of doing a voice. You know, my brain just goes like, oh, yeah, that's some, like, 20, 30-year-old dude. And I'm like, wait a minute. No, Eddie Murphy's at least in his 40s or 50s. So this guy has to be older than him, right?
Yeah.
I was like, why does Eddie Murphy's brother, who clearly has to have been in Hollywood for a while, right? Why does this nigga still sound like a 25-year-old nigga off the block? Like, what's going on?
I mean, it's crazy how, like, celebrity you don't hear often about the other ones. Like, who talks about Tony Rock? You know, Chris Rock's brother who also does stand-up?
Yeah. Charlie Murphy's, I did some bodyguard for, you know, back in the 80s, you know what I'm saying? But he ain't need it after a while, so I just kind of did my thing, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's Charlie Murphy. He just didn't want the fame and the lights. He really didn't give a shit. Like, the fact that he got a second career.
Because he just knew he was fucking funny. He was just funny as fuck. He didn't have to, like, be famous to prove it. The people that knew.
Right. It's so crazy. Like, Charlie Murphy really just, like, slid into his own career.
Yeah, it's like, that's why he's still to the... Like, I love Eddie Murphy's 80s stand-ups. I know for a fact they don't hold the test of time whatsoever. Right. But Charlie's storytelling is still... He's still one of the greatest storytellers
Incredible.
I've ever heard, next to Kevin Smith. Who can talk for an hour about a 10-minute story. But it's like, Charlie's sliding into the character. It's such spot-on metacasting.
Exactly, metacasting. And the reason why I love it so much is because, like, okay, obviously the, you know, black guy being voiced by a white guy, that's been such a big thing in, like, animation, right? Like, fucking the goddamn Cleveland Show, you know what I'm saying? Family Guy.
Yeah.
Happening at the same time, am I wrong? You know? So I love this flip of the obviously, like, you know, black guy voicing a white guy, but, like, the reason why, like, there's a reason why. It's because, oh, this white guy who looks like fucking Eminem, you know, he's trying to sound black and all that shit. So it's like, it's a double thing of, like, oh, the irony of, yeah, all those times you always hear a black guy and you know it's a white guy voicing him. Mm-hmm. But with this, there's a specific intentional purpose behind the flip, you know?
Yeah, where it's like, I mean, one, it's just fucking funny to hear Charlie Murphy, you know, playing this white thug-ass character with like, not even...
And who's pathetic, by the way. Yeah, like, listen to him talk about, like, being in the army, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I was kind of shitting myself when it was an army, you know, I was kind of giving away my position, but, you know...
but it's like, Charlie Murphy not even putting on a character, just being Charlie Murphy and saying along
clearly
with, like,
improv-ing
all he
shit.
Needs to do. Right. You know, there we was overseas, you know?
I couldn't fuck with all them women over there in them terrorist countries because, you know, they had all that shit coming up their face. You know what I'm saying? You know, their eyes can look real good, but then we take off that skirt and I got a tragedy. I think he says that in a later episode. Never mind. It's not this one.
But this is like, it's just so good because it exemplifies, I think, the thing of what Ed Wensler III represents, where it's like, no matter even going overseas, he's safe.
Yeah, and the naked, like, the naked sort of, well, in the same way that, like, Do the Right Thing, you know, if we're going back to it, like, really quick, like, Sal, you know, his character is, like, you know, bigoted and racist, but not in the most direct way that his son is, right? Like, mm-hmm. And so I feel like this is kind of, like, the evolution of that, of, like, you know, Ed Wensler, I mean, he can barely even hide it because, of course, he's his older man. But, like, the third generation, it's like, they're even more blatant about not giving a fuck, you know? Because he knows he's protected, you know? He's going to be the fucking president of the United States, and he's still going to be a dumbass. But that doesn't matter, because my granddad's a billionaire, and I'm fine. You know, what was that?
I Robots can't lose. Get?
Yeah, what was that robot? Because they're pretty much doing a George Bush allegory here, where that robot chicken skin is like, you know, my fellow Americans, I'm George Bush, and, you know, I would go with you to the war because I feel like all Americans should, you know, join in the fight. But this letter from my daddy says I done got to go.
Oh, well. Good luck, everybody else.
Yeah. I got bone spurs, sure. But back at the party.
But yeah, it's just like everything going on with Ed the Third trying to be hard.
Right, right.
Where it's just like, bro, you live in the suburbs. Your grandfather's basically a billionaire. Like,
oh, but he's got guns. Everything. He's got access to a lot of guns. So he's
that's what happens when you have money and you think you have to worry about things. It's like the false notion of like a gap in security. But he's like you were saying earlier, he's just an insecure grown ass man to the point where it's like he's literally connecting with a child. Where he's just right. Like, you know, like the literal proximity to blackness is like an 8-year-old, and he's like, here, take the gun and shoot me in the chest. It's like, are you sure? It's like, yeah, it'd be all right. Yeah, it's like you're connecting with a fucking he's a sad fucking man.
Yeah, and then we go back to the garden party where Uncle Ruckus, getting drunk and belligerent about, you know, the blacks at the party that aren't him, and he's got to cater everything. So he starts singing a song, the "Can't Trust Them New Niggas Over There," leaving a nigga asses and you know, eventually, like some like synth or something like that starts playing along behind him, so it just like weirdly heightens the joke of like, wait, what's happening? Oh, man. And then at the end of it, just as a reference to the cluelessness of the white people, right? So after, you know, he sings this song about how, like, you know, the Freemans, niggas over there, they're bad, they're evil. Blah, blah, blah. He passes out from, you know, getting drunk. And then you just hear one person say, I think the N-word is okay as long as they say it. And everyone just claps again. They're like, yeah. And it's like, that wasn't even the problem. That wasn't even slightly what the problem was.
Like, yes, that was the biggest takeaway from everything that just happened.
Yeah, I was like, oh, no, it's okay that he's saying it. It's like, no, what about the content of what he's saying? you idiots, you know? It's like, it's like, oh, what? No, it's cool for him to say the N-word. Like, he's literally saying, them niggas can't trust them and they're bad.
And it's like, well, you know, and the fact that, like, that is also a debate that still be going on where it's just like, well, it was in a song, so maybe. You know, like, even the animated white people are like, well, we shouldn't say it, but it's their word. They can say it. But in real life, it's not like that. It's like, well, come on, man. Travis Scott said I could say it. It's like, you're going to trust that Travis Scott is the voice of black people. That's the one. Oh, man,
is this an allegory for Kendrick Lamar doing the...
Well, he stopped her as soon as she says, like, oh, no.
But he set her up.
He did.
Why would you come ask her to sing the song "What the Most Niggas" in it? Like, come on now.
But it's like, but that's, it was a setup and she fell for it. That's the problem. That's the problem with America today.
Yeah.
It's like, you got to recognize a setup when you see one. It's like, look, if there's candy under the box, it's a goddamn trap. Like, if the black guy says, no, it's okay, you're about to get jumped. It's a setup.
And you see a camera around, fuck it. Be smarter, white people.
Yeah, it's like, got to be more careful than that, you know?
No, we're just going to upload it to BlackTube. It's just a black version of YouTube. Don't worry about it.
You mean World Star? We're going to have our own YouTube for black people. We're going to call it World Star Hip Hop. Yeah. No way this could ever backfire.
You know, World Star Hip Hop always feels like a site that, like, I feel like any time I have ever gone to it, it feels like it's 5 years past when anyone should still be going to the site. Doesn't it feel that way?
And yet, against the will of God and Satan and themselves, it persists.
It's still here, yeah.
It's like, it powers through against the temptation, against man's will, in defiance of the will of the devil and God and the Vedas and whatever supreme powers that be. Worldstar
hip-hop ratchetness must flow, essentially.
It's the Waffle House of video sites, where the only time it's down is if there's some sort of natural disaster or a cosmic event. You know, Galactus has to show up for Worldstar hip-hop to be like, damn, nigga, that's crazy, ain't it? A big purple bitch in the sky. People just telling jokes.
Right. Oh, man. So we get to the end where, you know, after the shooting happens, after Huey kind of, you know, does what he does, Granddad's feeling kind of nervous. He comes up to, you know, Wutzler and, you know, Wutzler, like, he's about to apologize. Like, oh, you know, sorry for my son shooting your, sorry for my grandkid shooting your grandkid, essentially. And Wutzler is like, you know, Granddad's like, oh, are you mad? And Ed Wensler gives him a speech. He's like, in 30 years, that boy will be president of the United States, and he'll still be a fucking idiot. And so they're like, oh, okay, I guess everything's good. You know, they have a drink, a toast to the old school, you know. And again, he calls him free man at the end. Like, again, it's sort of like the old school. The way you're saying it, though, makes it feel like a slur.
Which, I mean, I think that was the intention, where it's just like, yes, you're one of them, the free men. Yes.
But yeah, that is the first episode, and man, it is fucking explosive. It's just as good as you remember it. Any final notes before we get up out of here?
Nah, it still holds up incredibly well. You know, it's... I don't know. There's a lot to...
Yeah.
It's just sharp. It doesn't waste any time. It's still funny. You know, it's like... it's just a strong... There's a handful of shows that I think have, like, great first episodes. Doom Patrol is one of them. Huh. This is another one. The fact that it holds up damn near 20 years later, it still looks good.
Still feels subversive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's tight. It's just like a tight... You know, 20-minute setup, and the fact that, like, it starts strong and then in the first season just gets, like, better and better in terms of iconic, like, immediately after this. It's just, like, iconic episode.
The trial of R. Kelly.
Iconic episode. Iconic episode. Like, the next three episodes, like, R. Kelly, the hoe episode, and the fight in the parking lot. Back to back.
We really about to go through it.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. And then Gin Rummy is 5. Gangsta. Jesus Christ.
Like, it just keeps adding. Yo.
The Christmas. Good Lord. It's impressive how strong just this first season is with, oh my God, Return of the King was episode 9?
What? I thought that was season 2.
Jesus, I thought it was 2. Return of the King is 9. Idis is 10. Oprah's 11.
Holy shit. How is this all the first season?
The graffiti episode is 12.
Yo, we're about to go in. But yeah, that's assuming...
I don't think it slows down until, like, episode 13, where it's like,
yeah,
okay, it eases off a little bit. But, like, the first... God damn. Jesus.
But look, this is what we have. This is what you have to look forward to if you guys are enjoying our analysis and breakdown of the Boondocks. You know what I'm saying? Long form breakdowns. Apparently, unlike anything else the internet is giving you right now. you know.
Yeah, so, it just apparently doesn't exist.
Yeah. So until next time, when we are able to go back in on some Boondocks, I'm DJ,
and I'm Will the Greatest.
And can't trust them new niggas over there. Even they nigga assholes and I trust them new niggas with fingers on triggers. God damn it, God damn it, Ruckus. Damn it, Ruckus.
Ruckus.
Oh, my fucking God. This show is so fucking classic.
Oh, my God.
All right.